Bob Phillips here once again with the AVR Arts Review, and I happen to be sitting down here at OCAD of all places with an extraordinary lady that I've run into several times before, and that is Bonnie Devine. How are you today, Bonnie?
I'm very well, thank you, Bob. How are you?
As a matter of fact, I'm very well because I saw something this afternoon, which was a discussion. Oh, that I think that you were a part of that. Do you mind if I ask what part you played in that?
Well, it was a panel of the 007 Art Collective, who are visiting here from Ottawa. We have an opening tomorrow at the Gladstone Hotel, so we were here discussing Aboriginal art in general and our own practices in particular.
As a matter of fact, this afternoon, there was actually a marvelous discussion that took place downstairs there. Were you involved with setting that up at all or making certain that it happened?
Yes, I was. We collaborated with the art gallery at OCAD University, which is called On Site at OCAD. Charles Reeve is the curator there. And I let him know that the collective was coming to town and who was in the collective. And we do a weekly Buffalo Stew Lunch. It's a community lunch for our students every Wednesday. And so it seemed like a really good idea to combine our Buffalo Stew Lunch with a panel discussion, a roundtable discussion with the visiting collective. And Charles Reeve at the gallery offered his space. So that's how it happened. And I think it was pretty successful. We had a really great turnout and a very lively discussion.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I saw students sitting there enthralled. First of all, the fact that they were in the presence of such powerful artists as are members of the group. But do you mind if I ask what your connection to OCAD is?
I'm the founding chair of the Aboriginal Visual Culture Program here. We started this program 4.5 years ago, and I've been building curriculum and building the program up. We started out with a couple of classes, and we introduced a minor in Aboriginal visual culture in 2009, and starting September 2013, we're going to have a major, which means you can do a BFA in Aboriginal visual culture starting next year.
That's absolutely astounding, because the BFA, which allows you to teach in almost any situation, if it's not geared to Native people, then the chances of us being particularly comfortable in there seems to me to be a little bit different. Whereas if it's an MFA that is geared very heavily towards our people, I think that would be a tremendous advantage.
Yeah. I just need to say, we aren't at the point yet where we're offering the MFA, and it's the MFA that allows them to teach. Right now, it's an undergraduate degree, 4 years, in studio practice and critical issues, history, social sciences, and so on, that are geared toward Aboriginal visual culture. So we're not at the MFA stage yet.
Well, hopefully that will come, and I thank you for correcting me on that, because, I'm not familiar with what's happening there. On the other hand, it seems to me, not so many years ago, you actually got your own MFA, is that correct? From whereabouts was that?
I did an MFA in sculpture and installation at York University.
Oh.
I did my undergrad here at OCADU, also in sculpture installation. So, yeah, I'm a practicing installation artist, but also teaching now and doing the directing here of the development of this program.
Well, it seems to me that you get your fingers in a lot of different things, because you've also curated.
Yes.
One very prominent name comes to mind. Do you mind if I ask who that is?
I curated the retrospective exhibition of Daphne Ojig. That project opened at the Art Gallery of Sudbury in 2007. And then traveled across Canada and into the USA until 2010. It opened in the National Gallery of Canada in Ottawa in October of 2009. It was the first exhibition of an Aboriginal woman artist that was ever at the National Gallery. So it was very important to curate Daphne Ojig. I felt that she hadn't had sufficient attention, or her work hadn't been properly assessed, I thought. And I find that a lot of Aboriginal artists are like this. They will do what they see that the culture needs at any given time, and we'll try to fill those gaps. And I'm certainly not alone in an artist curator when the need is obvious or apparent to me.
I was just chatting with one of the other artists, and the idea came up that very often in the mainstream, people are pigeonholed. You're either a curator or you're an artist, but you can't be both. Whereas in the native community, one day you're painting and drawing, and the next day you're a dancer, and the next day... So that sort of fits with our culture.
I absolutely agree. In my opinion, we have always been interdisciplinary, multidisciplinary. We have always done what is necessary. Even, you know, back in the day, my grandparents were trappers, but I watched them as they made the implements, they decorated the house, they created even the clothes that we wore. Everything was made. So multi-talented, interested across a broad range of subjects. This is our tradition, and so I think it's quite clear that we're quite comfortable changing hats. And also, because of the, you know, the suppression of our histories and our life ways, our culture, we find ourselves having to do that, right? Having to step in and step up to the plate when a need is there. And I find that this is just the way that we are.
Well, that's also one of the ways that you are, because it seems to me you come from Serpent River, is that correct?
That's right.
And Serpent River had a number of problems that you deal with in your art, is that correct?
That's right. I grew up in the time of the uranium mining in Elliott Lake, and most of the people in my community and all the people in my family at one time or another worked in that mine, or those mines. There were a number of mines up on the rock in those days. And the devastation from the uranium mining, the pollution of the river as a result of the tailings that came out of the mines, and the sulfur plant that was located right in Cutler, right in the middle of our reserve, all of that left us with a legacy of a degradation in the water and degradation in the land. So yeah, that has been a subject of my art practice for many years now.
And that art practice has actually gone across different types of disciplines. For example, it seems to me that I saw at one point a sculpture that you made. It was a canoe out of paper. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing you know, there was a video, or you have been very, very multidisciplinary yourself here.
Yeah, I like to use whatever materials I can find to tell this story, because I think that I always think I haven't got it right yet. I haven't told it properly. So I sewed my thesis notes. It was the discovery of uranium, and the story of that was the subject of my MFA thesis at York. I had this big box of notes from that thesis, and I didn't want to throw them away, but I didn't know what to do with them. And then one day it came to me that I wanted to make something that was useful out of them. And so I sewed them into a canoe. And then I made pictures of my memories of that and some of the stories that had been told to me, specifically by my uncle, Art Mewasige. And I got his permission to tell that story again, and I made a series of 78 small drawings of that. And then subsequently, I turned those drawings into a film, so there was a video that came out of it as well. I return to that subject from time to time because I know that there are still other things that I want to tell about that. I'll be traveling home to Serpent River at the end of November, and there are more things that I want to find out. So I'm going to sit down with my Uncle Art then and ask him some more questions about it. It's a very mysterious and powerful story to me. And so, yes, I continue to be interested in it.
It may be a very mysterious and powerful story to you, but it is a story that relates to us all. And not only Native people, but it relates to the mainstream as well, because the kind of damage and lack of thought that went into dealing with nature and the human beings and the animals that live on the land, you've turned out to be a spokesperson for that.
I guess in a way I have. I know that... I feel a little bit hesitant to say that because I'm not an environmentalist. My background isn't in chemistry, and much of what is going on with respect to the water, the degradation of the water, the transmission of disease, exactly what are the effects of radiation on the human body, how is cancer implicated, what is the... what is the result of the acid on the ground? A lot of these things, I just don't know. So I hesitate to be the spokesperson because I don't feel that I'm an expert. The way I prefer to think of myself is the images that I have seen growing up of the land and the water and the people, and they're both beautiful and terrifying, and they're compelling to me, and I feel a need and a desire to replicate them, and that's really what I'm doing. I don't see myself as a spokesman for this.
Perhaps what I'm talking about there is that by replicating that, by presenting it in a way that we can all see it, then we can understand that there is a problem there and it's a problem that should be addressed without having to go into all the details of what percentage or how many, radons or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, by bringing attention to it, that's what I mean by like a storyteller or like... Unfortunately, it's coming up on time to end this segment. So all I can say to you, Bonnie Devine, not only for your interview here today, but for your service to Native people, chi 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 migwich to you.